Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Samach Beis. Mirtz Hashem, we're going to be finishing off Perek HaKones and starting Meruba. We're learning today Lili Nishmas Benjamin Platt, that's Eliyahu Platt's father, Dov Ber Ben Meir Halevi. As I mentioned many times, Eliyahu is the one that provides me with all of the shul and other people's yard sites that we learned for, and his father, Eliyahu, from all the work that Eliyahu does, and from our learning today. We continue to learn, of course, for the success of Tzahal, for the safety of Tzahal, the Kochos HaBitachon, for the return of the Chatufim, and for the Nechama, for all of those that have given the supreme sacrifice, the Korbanos that they've given for Klal Yisrael. Okay, let us pick up about 10 lines from the top with the words Omar Rava on Samach Beis Omid Aleph. We'll get right into it. We'll see what we're talking about when we tell us what Rava said. Rava tells us, Omar Rava, Hanosein Dinar Zohav Leisha. If a man gives a golden dinar as opposed to a silver dinar, golden dinar is worth, of course, much more than a silver dinar, and he gives it to a woman, the Mefarshim explain, why does he give us the case of a woman? The same halacha would apply if he gave it to a man. It's just this lashon, Hanosein Dinar Zohav Leisha, is a lashon that we use all the time for Kiddushin, or the man giving the woman money for Kesef Kiddushin, so that's why he just used the case of a woman over here. Again, it's Lav Davka, a woman, the same halach would apply to a man. So Rava tells us if a man gives a dinar zav to a woman, and he gives it to her for Shmira purposes, not for Kiddushin purposes, he says, go and watch this golden dinar for me. But he doesn't say that it's a golden dinar. The Amar Law, he's Zaribo. He says, be very, very careful with it, not to lose it, because Shel Kesef, who he under-evaluates it, don't know why he did this, but let's say he did this, and he gives her a golden dinar, but she only thinks that it's a silver dinar. So in this situation, if she actively goes and damages herself, she goes and throws it away, she goes and destroys it in some way, directly herself. The aske biyodaim, Rashi says, she either burns it, she sarfaso, or she hishlachto liyam, or she throws it into the yam. So in this situation where she does it with her own hands, hizakto herself directly, so then she has to pay for the golden dinar, mishalem is dinar zohav. She pays for the value of the golden dinar, and that, as we'll see in the other cases that we're about to describe, where she only has to pay for the value of the silver, because she only thought she had silver. And this is because if you go and damage something directly with your hands, as Rashi tells us, in this situation, you have caused the damage. And this is different when we have other scenarios that we'll see in a second where she's just watching it and she's posheya, she does pshia, she's not careful with it, she's negligent. Then she can argue, well, listen, I only thought I was watching a silver dinar, so I wasn't as careful. If I'd known it was a golden dinar, I'd be much more careful. You know, think about it. If somebody gives you something that's a very, very, very precious item to watch, you're going to be much more careful with it than they give you a candy bar to watch. No, you lost the candy bar, not such a big deal. I'll pay you for the candy bar. So here, when she directly causes the damage with her own hand, she can't say, well, if I'd known it was gold, I would have been more careful. No, you weren't told to go and damage this over here, as the Gemara would say. She has to pay for the full dinar zov, because the man who gave her this golden dinar can say to her, listen, I gave it to you to watch. Who gave you permission to go and destroy it directly yourself? Therefore, you have to pay full damages. This is no different than if somebody goes and damages somebody else. They can't argue, well, you know, it's so expensive. I broke your vase. I didn't know it was a Ming vase that was worth tens of thousands of dollars. I thought it was a $5 vase. So I broke it. No, that's not a taina. That's not a valid argument for somebody to say, I don't have to pay you the full price because I didn't know how expensive it was. So that's when she directly damaged it herself. He's zaktu. However, Parshabo, if she does, did Peshia, she put it down, but didn't watch it carefully. She says, it's only a dinar silver. If it's kesef, if I lose it, it's $25. So not such a big deal. If I know that it was $2,500, so then I would have watched it much more carefully. So then she has the right to say, no, I didn't know how valuable it was. You gave it to me to watch. I thought I was watching something less valuable. In that situation, mishalem, mishal kesef. Then she only took upon herself the responsibility to watch it for kesef, and therefore that's all she has to pay, because now she can say to him, here she has a valid taina to him, she can say to him, the nitirusa de kaspa kabil alai, nitirusa de dava lo kabil alai. I accepted by myself to watch something that was worth a low price, silver dinar, not a golden dinar, and therefore I only accepted upon myself the responsibility for silver. If you're giving me gold, I said, no way, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to be responsible for something so expensive. So therefore, that's a valid taina on her part. That's the first thing that Rava tells us. Now, this is, Rava learned this on his own. He says this memra on his own. Amale Rav Mordechai le Rav Ashi. When Rav Mordechai heard this memra of Rava, he said over to Rav Ashi that, yeah, Rava said it as his own memra. Atun bid the Rava masnisula. Rava seemed to say this on his own. However, Anan, we could have learned this directly from the Mishnah. Mimas Nisan Pshitulon. It's actually a Braisa. We could have learned this over here from the Braisa that we learned at the end of yesterday's shir. Remember, at the end of yesterday's shir, we had Rav Yehuda was being molded to the Chachamim. Again, Rav Yehuda says that normally you're chayef for Tomun Be'esh, and the Chachamim say you're not chayef for Tomun Be'esh, but Rav Yehuda was molded to the Chachamim that if a person was given permission to bring chitim into the other person's property. So Reuven asked Shimon, can I bring my chitin in your property? And Shimon said, yes. And instead, the chipon besorin, when Shimon sees what's in his property, he just sees that it's sorin. So it's of a lesser value. Wheat is worth much more than barley. So he gave permission for wheat, but then he sees the other guy seems to have brought in only barley. So then the person could say, listen, I thought it was only barley, therefore I didn't watch it so carefully. And likewise, if he gave him permission, Reuven asked permission to put barley into Shimon's property, and Shimon said yes, but then, v'chipon v'chitin, and he went and put wheat around it. Now, that was unknown to Shimon that there's now wheat around it, and therefore, eino mishalem elo d'mei sorin bilvad. So Shimon's responsibility was only for barley. That's all he had accepted. He accepted that there would be barley over there. When he sees that there's wheat, he says, I never gave you permission for that. I'm not responsible for that. Or if he actually brought in wheat when he was only allowed to go and bring in barley. So Reuven didn't have the right to put that there. Shimon didn't accept that. And therefore, Enu Mishalem Elo D'mei Sorin Bilvad. Shimon's responsibility is only for the barley that he allowed them. So what do you see from here? This is what Rav Mordechai tells Rav Ashi. We can learn out Rav's din from this b'risa. Alma, Amarle, Nitirusa Desari Kabil Yalai. The person has the right to say, only accept upon himself barley. So too, this woman has the right to say, Hochanami. She has the right to say to the man, Amalei, Natirusa Dadava, Lo Kabila, I only accept upon myself silver. I did not accept upon myself the watching of gold. So what Rav has said is a straightforward member, Rav Mordechai explained to Rav Ashi, we could learn out directly from this price. Amar Rav, now Rav tells us the following halacha. Shamis Milsel of Yehuda, I heard a member said over the name of Yehuda. Again, Rav Yehuda is the opinion that says Tomlin Ba'esh normally chayef for the Lo Yadana Mahi, but I don't know. I knew he said something in this regard, but I don't know what member Rabbi Yehuda the Tana said. That's what Rav tells him. Tells us. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel tells his colleague, his great Chavrusa Rav, he tells him, Amar Shmuel, V'lo Yoda Abba, Mai Shmilei, and in fact, you, Abba, either Abba is a title of respect, it's like calling him father, or that was his name. Rav was known as Rav, but that wasn't his name. He wasn't born, they didn't name him Rav at birth. His name was Abba at birth. So Rav was known as Abba. So Shmuel, who was a colleague of his, he's a Talmud Chaver of his, so Shmuel is allowed to call him by his first name. So Shmuel says to Rav, Shmuel held Rav in great respect. He was noted to Rav, albeit we often passing like Shmuel against Rav in regards to Yisurim. We passing like Rav in regards to Mamona. We passing normally like Shmuel. In any event, Shmuel says to Rav, I know what Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, said over here. You don't know that? V'lo Yoda Abba, my Shmilei? You don't know this member that you said you heard a beautiful member about Rabbi Yehuda? I know what it is. L'Rabbi Yehuda, the Mechayiv, al Niske Tomun Be'esh. This is Rabbi Yehuda. He holds, Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, holds this din of damages inside a fire. So in that situation, the rabbis, what is this additional member that Rav had heard but couldn't remember? It was that Asu Takonas Nigzal Be'isho. Let's say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you hid this arniki. The person, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is even chayav for the arniki inside. If the fire was lit in the person's property, it wasn't lit in his own property and then traveled to the other person's property. But you go light a fire on somebody else's property and you burn down their haystack, and this guy hid his wallet in that haystack. That was his hiding place for his wallet. He didn't hide it under a mattress. He hid it in the haystack. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you're chayv even for the arniki. No, how much money was in the arniki? Or he put some utensils over there. So the utensils were all burned. How much was the threshing material? How much was the yoke of the cows, the clay bakar, or the morigin that we had spoken about yesterday, that everybody agreed, even the Chachamim agreed, that if you burn somebody else's property and there are things hidden, that even the Chachamim mowed in that situation. So how much are they worth? So the memra that Rav had forgotten, that Shmuel reminds him now, is that Rav Yehuda held that all the person has to do is swear, Asu Takonas Nigzal Be'isho. He just has to swear, yes, there was $1,000 in that arniki. Yes, those clay buck or the morigan, they were worth $500. All he has to do is swear how much they were worth, and he's able to collect it. And this is similar to the din of a gezela, where the person stole something, and now we don't know how much it was worth. So we believe the owner of the property to say, yes, he stole, you know, stole my car. My car was a brand new, you know, a fancy car. It's worth $50,000, as opposed to it was an old jalopy worth $10,000. So this din that we believe the nigzal, the one who was stolen from, to say what the value of it was. He just has to swear what the value was, and then the gazlan has to go and pay that. Now we know what its value is. So this similar din by the nigzal, Rabbi Yehuda said the same thing applies with Tomun Bo'esh. We don't know how much it's worth. We don't have independent evidence of how much the item that was hidden in the haystack was worth. So he says there was $1,000 in there. He says the clay bunker or the murigim was worth $500. So we believe him with the shvua. So that's the famous memory that Yehuda made that Shmuel reminded Rav about. Now they ask a similar question. Boy, Amema asks, what about this takana that we made for the nigzal, that we made by the eish, do we also apply it to a mosor or not? Asu takanas nigzal b'mosor or lo? A mosor is a meiser, is a person who tattles to the government on somebody. So this guy, Reuven, goes to the government and says, hey, Shimon, he has stuff over there that you should take. The government should take it. The government goes and takes it. So he caused Shimon damage. Now, we don't know how much that item was worth. So we don't have independent evaluation of that item. So Shimon says it's worth $1,000. So the question that Amemar is asking is, do we believe Shimon with the shvuah to say that this Moiser, this Reuven, caused him $1,000 worth of damage or not? Do we say, Amosim Chaver, Oliver Raya, that no, if you want to claim from Reuven that he caused you damage by being a Moiser of $1,000, you have to bring a Raya that is worth $1,000. Otherwise, Reuven says it's worth $20. So do we make this takana of the Nigzal not only by Eish, or do we also make it by a Moiser? That's Amemar's question. So, Alibu de Mandioma, Lo Daininon, Dino de Garmi, Lo Tiboy Loch. Now, here we introduce for the first time in the Masechta, I think, this concept of Groma versus Garmi. And the way the majority of the Rishonim learn this, not Rashi, but the way the majority of the Rishonim learn this, which is normally the way that we explain Garmi versus Groma, is that we said many times Groma b'nizokin is potter. If you indirectly cause damage, then you're not going to be chayav b'dini adam. You're chayav neshamayim, but you won't be chayav b'dini adam. So that's a standard Groma. But then there's a more direct indirect damage, and that's called Garmi, according to many of the Rishonim. So we have like different levels. When you actually destroy something, you break his window. So that's not a Groma b'nizokin, that you did the nizokin. But if you were to indirectly cause the damage, so in this situation, we pointed out many times, groma b'nizokin is potter. But if you were to more directly, indirectly cause the damage, and I won't give you examples of this now because we'll have this sugya a little bit later on, but that's called garmi. That's in between, so to say, a total indirect and a directly causing the damage. So there's like a closer to directly causing the damage that's called garmi. So that's the way that most of the Rishonim understand this. Rashi explains groma and garmi is exactly the same thing. They're indirect causations. And ever we have the opinion that garmi is in fact liable, so he says that's groma. And Rashi doesn't differentiate between garmi and groma. He says there's a Tana that holds that groma ben izokin is chayiv. No, we've been saying all the time, groma ben izokin is patur. That's like the other Tana. In any event, we'll learn it simple that garmi is a little bit different than groma. It's a more direct, indirect causation. And again, we'll discuss this more in the upcoming Dapim. In any event, the Gemara is now asking the following question from a Meimar. According to the Man Diomed, it says that lo dainin on dina d'agmi, even garmi, you're never going to be chayiv for, so then the question doesn't get off the line. The Moser is certainly, at most, garmi. He told on you, so that's garmi. That's a perfect example of garmi. He told the authorities, you have that property or that item there, and the authorities then took it from you. So that's definitely garmi. So if you say that you're not chayiv for garmi, then the question doesn't get off the ground because you're not chayiv. So we don't believe the guy to make a shvuah to say how much it was worth. You're not chayiv. So lo tibar lo, the question doesn't get off the ground. The masoros nami lo dainina. So then in a moiser case, there is no din of nizokin that you have to pay for. So if you hold garmi, you is not chayiv for. So then the question doesn't get off the ground. Where does the question get off the ground? Ella, ki tiboy loch, aliba the man diomar, dainina didn't garmi, that this indirect, direct causation, you told the government, Yankel has that property there that you don't know about, go take it from him. So you caused that mesiris to cause Yankel the damage, so then, and if you hold the omar, dainina didn't garmi, that in fact you're liable for such a waste, right? So there, Amerim is asking, did they make this takana, asu takana is nigzal b'mosar, and therefore the mishtaba v'shokil olo. Do we allow the person who was tattled on, the person who lost his property, his yankel, who Reuven was moiser, his property to the government took it, so do we believe Reuven to have to pay Yanko for whatever Yanko says. He makes a shua that was worth $1,000, and the basin who holds Garni says, now you have to pay him $1,000. Well, no, you have to bring independent proof that we don't hold that we believe him with a shua. You have to go bring independent proof how much it's worth. And then that's what Motzi Mechayer, Olav Araya, Reuven will have to pay, and the Gemara doesn't give us an answer to this. Take it. We left this with an Iboya, the law of Shitole. And then where it has a Maisa Shahaya that's very similar to this. How Gabra, the once was a man, the Botash, he gave a zetz, he gave a kick, Bikaspiso the Chavre, and Shadje Benara, he gave a zetz to the guy's money box, he gave a zetz to his safe, and he kicked it into the river. And now it's lost. So do we make him pay? Yeah, of course we make him pay. He destroyed it, but how much money was inside the box? So also, More, the owner of this box, came to the base in Omer, and he said to them, Hochi v'hochi, have a labor gav up. No, I had $1,000 in the safe deposit that he kicked into the river. So do we, in fact, believe him now to say this? Or do we say, no, Motzi b'chaver Olav Araya? That's the exact same question that we've been saying, this Takanas Gazlin, do we say it over here in the case of the guy knocking the guy's safe into the river? Do we or do we not believe the owner of the safe to say how much was in there? So Yosef Rav Ashi became Aimba. So Rav Ashi didn't know the answer. He went and investigated. And he said, what do we do over here? Ki hai gavin mai. In this situation, do we or do we not say this takonas nigzal by this case as well? So Rav Ashi was pondering this. And Amalei Ravina, the Rav Acha Brei the Rava. So Ravina said to Rav Acha Brei the Ravava, or others say, it was Rav Acha Brei the Rava who said it to Rav Ashi directly. Whoever it was, they said, Lav Hayinu Masnisin. Isn't this exactly the case of our Mishnah? What is our Mishnah? That if you go and set the fire in the other guy's property, you set his tower on fire. You set his house on fire. So then you're obligated to pay. Shemeshalim kol mashav esochu. Even the Chachamim say in that situation that Tomu be'eshu chayi, because it's not that you set the fire on your property and it traveled over there. Then Tomu be'eshu chachosei is potter. Hey, you set the fire on the guy's property. You burned down his garage. So therefore, everybody, even the Chachamim, Mo, the Rabbi Yehuda, Shemeshalim kol mashav esochu. You have to pay for the contents of the garage. Shekain derech bnei adam haniach bebatim, because people store stuff in their garages. They store stuff in their bira. So therefore, this is the same thing. There was a safe deposit box. So we believe the person in the bira case, so we should believe the person in the safe deposit box. That's what he wanted to suggest. However, whoever it was that was said this potential solution to, either Ravina who said it to Ravachbrei the Rava, or it was Ravachbrei the Rava who said it to Ravashi, so that person that they said it to responded, Amalei. No, the two aren't the same. Either Kartoin Zuze Hochanami. If you were going to claim that there was money in the box, then you would be Taka right. But he wasn't claiming that there was money in the box. Hocha, but Mayaskin, what was in the box? So more encouraged the word Mayaskin and Hocha. In the case of the box, the Kotoin Marganisa, there was a jewel, a diamond in the box. And there the question is, my, mi mancha inshe Marganisa, the Kasmasa Olo. The question is that the normal way people store a very precious diamond? Just in a little bit of a safe in their house that could be easily picked up and carried away or kicked into the river? No, people put that in a bank safe deposit. People bury that someplace in a very well-hidden place. So the question is, do we believe him for something that is not usually put there? And that was the question that was asked. And again, Teiku, the Gemara doesn't give an answer to this question as well. Finally, another similar idea. Amalei Rav Yemar L'Ravashi. Rav Yemar asked Rav Ashi, what about Toin Kosro de Kasbo de Bira Mai? What happens if the guy whose bira was burned down says, I had an extremely expensive item there. I had a silver kos in that place. I had my Shabbos becher in that place, a silver kos, and it's worth $100, as opposed to the normal things that are there are worth $10. So what do we do in that situation? Do we believe him or not? So I'm like, Rav Yemar asked Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi told him, Chazina, we go and look and see, is this the type of person that would have a silver becher, a very expensive silver becher? E inish amidhu, amid means Ashi, Rashi says, if this guy's a well-off guy that would in fact store a silver becher in the bira, so then we would say, yeah, so then we believe him, and he has to pay, the one who let the fire would have to pay for the silver becher, because the Islay Kasa the Kasma, because if he's a wealthy person that would have such a cup, so then we believe him. Or alternatively, even if he's not a wealthy person, Inami Inish Mehemnahu, he's a very trustworthy person, and everybody puts their silver goblets with him when they go away. So he does have silver goblets over there because the mafkide in Shekabe, people do trust him. So if there's a reason, a plausible explanation for why this guy would have a very expensive silver goblet in his bira, so then mishtaba shokil. So then we believe him to just swear and then he'll get paid. But the elo, so if this person is a very poor person, he's not a trustworthy person, there's no way this guy we would have expected to have a silver cup over there unless he can bring a riot that he had the silver cup there that was burned. So lav kol kamina. We don't just believe him in that situation. He needs to bring a raya. The Gemara continues and now goes off and discusses an interesting question. Amar le Rav Ada berei de Rav Avya le Rav Ashi. Rav Ada, who's the son of Rav Avya, says to Rav Ashi, what is the difference of ma bein gazlon le chamson? What is the practical difference between a gazlon, a person who steals forcibly, and a chamson? A chamson is somebody, as we see in the Gemara, that goes and grabs something, but he pays for it. So Amar le, so Rav Ashi says back to Rav Ada berei de Rav Avya, a chamson yohiv domi. The chamson takes something, but he pays for it. So he grabs your vase, which isn't for sale, but he pays you for it. A gazlan lo yavdami. The gazlan just takes it and doesn't go and give you money for it. So they're both, in a way, thieves. They both are taking something that you really didn't want to give them, but the chamson at least pays for it. The Bnei Yehuda has a very interesting gematria here. Says the word chamson is actually a combination of chos, which means to have mercy, and mem nun, which in gematria is 90. And the gematria of 90 is exactly the same gematria as gazlon. So the gimel zayin is 10, the lamed is 30, so that's 40, and then the nun is 50, so 90. So the mem nun from chamson is equal in gematria to the gazlon. So the difference between them is that the chamson also is chas. He has a little bit of mercy on you. He is taking your item without, so to say, your willingness to sell it, but he at least pays you for it. Interesting, Ben Yehuda. In any event, this difference, Rav Ashi says, is the difference between the chamson and the gazlan. Amalei, Rav Ada berei the Rav Avya didn't like this teretz. He says, "I yohiv domi chamson karislei." This guy paid for it. Are you calling him a chamson? How is he any different than a regular purchaser? After all, Amar Rav Huna, we have the famous statement from Rav Huna, "Tuluyo v'zabin zvine zvini." This is a famous memra which says that a person is always willing to go and sell his things. So if somebody wants to go and buy something from somebody, albeit they're in a situation where they're forced to sell it, so the bottom line is he's forced to sell it. He's happy to get the sale, even though he's missing the item that he's selling. So to Louis Gazabin, the guy is, so to say, held up, and he sells it, so the sale is a sale. The fact, we don't look into his emotional state. We don't look into the fact that he really doesn't want to sell it. No, if he's needing money, he needs cash, he needs to get some cash, so then he'll sell something that he likes. So this chamson is basically giving him cash or something. Okay, he doesn't really want to sell it, but the bottom line is, the sale's a sale. So why are we calling this chamson over here, so to say, a bad person? So Rav Ashi responds back to Rav Ada berei de Rav Avya. He says, no, lokasha. Hod yamai rotsani. Hod lo yamai rotsani. No, the difference is, when we said tluya vizabin zvine zvine, that's talking about a person who unfortunately does have to sell it. He doesn't want to. That's his emotional state. He doesn't want to sell it, but the bottom line is he's willingly selling it as much as he doesn't want to. It's a willing sale. As opposed to the chamson, he's taking it from the guy that the guy doesn't want to go and sell it. It's not for sale. Albeit he's getting paid for it, but he doesn't want to sell it. So that's the difference between the two. Bottom line is, the chamson is also a type of a thief, albeit he's a little bit better than the gazlan. At least he's remunerating him somewhat. He's compensating him somewhat for the item that he basically took without permission. Okay, we turn to Samach Beis, Omid Beis, and we go to the last mishnah of this beautiful perek. And the mishnah tells us, gates. What is a gate? So Rashi tells us a foreign language word, which if you look in the Lazi Rashi, pirusho nitzotz. It means a spark. It means a flame came out of this hammer, let's say, banging on the anvil. So this gates shiosa mitachas hapatish v'hizik. So the blacksmith is banging the hammer on the anvil, and a spark comes out, and that spark causes damage. So in this situation, chayev, the blacksmith should have been more careful to look around to make sure that there's nothing there that's flammable that's going to be put on fire. And if he's not careful, so he's held liable, chayev, in that situation to go and pay for whatever damage that he did. Now, the Mishnah continues and tells us something that we learned early in the Masechta. We had this already, you can see in the Masechta Shas, we had this on Daf Chav Beis, and we had this more in Shabbos and in other places. So, a gomel, a camel, shayaton pishtan, it was overloaded with flax. For all of our Bishus HaRabim, it's going to Bishus HaRabim, but the flax is extending into various stores along the way, which he doesn't have the right to go and do. The nichnas pishtanu l'soche chonus, and the flax that is overstuffed on this camel, so it is going into the stores and it catches fire with the lanterns, the flames that are inside the stores. And the lantern of the guy inside the shop is unfortunately now putting the flames of the lantern onto the pishtan, and it goes and causes all sorts of damage. So who pays for this damage? So v'hidlik hazabira, if you went and unfortunately burned down a house, burned down a tower over here, so the baal gomel is chayim, the owner of the camel with the flax on it that was overstuffed and shouldn't have gone into the store, and did go into the store, and he wasn't careful with it, and it caught fire, so he's held liable. The baal gomel is responsible because he had no right in this situation to go and have the flax go into the store and catch fire, and he wasn't careful with it. However, if, however, the storekeeper had a lantern outside the store, now you're not allowed to put the lantern outside the store, that's the Rishos HaRabim. And we do have camels walking there that are normally laden with their produce or other animals, and now if they catch fire because they don't expect to have a lantern, a fire outside, so then in this situation, HaChenvoni Chayev, then the store owner is going to be Chayev because he didn't have the right to put the flame there. Bottom line is, from both these two cases, we see that if you don't have the right to do something, then you're going to be held liable for any damage that results from your actions. Now, this was the Tanakhama's opinion that the Chenvani is going to be Chayev if he has a lantern there outside. But the Tanakhama says this applies even for Hanukkah. And now Rabbi Yehuda comes along and disagrees in regards to Hanukkah. He agrees with the Tanakhama. The rest of the year, you're not allowed to leave a lantern outside your store, but on Hanukkah, you're allowed to. Rav Yehuda Omer, B'ner Hanukkah Potter. Rav Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakhama, and Rav Yehuda says that if the storekeeper had put, the Chenvani put his Ner Hanukkah outside, so then he has a right to do so, and now it's the responsibility of the camel driver to go and make sure that he doesn't have his flax get burnt or cause damage from the lantern of the Chanukiah that the storekeeper is allowed to keep there, and therefore Rav Yehuda says in this situation, the Chenvani would be Potter. Okay. Now, Gemara starts off and says, Amar Ravina Mishmei the Rava. Ravina says the name of Rava. The Shema Mino, we can see from the opinion, Mi de Rabbi Yehuda, from that Rabbi Yehuda says that for the Chanukiah, for the lantern that is a menorah, for Hanukkah that's outside, the storekeeper is allowed to keep it there and he's not going to be held liable. We see that the halacha is, Ner Chanukah mitzvah lahanicha besol chasora. That obviously the mitzvah of Chanukah is it has to be within the bottom 10 tefachim of the ground. It has to be above 3 tefachim, otherwise it's on the ground and the lantern can't be on the ground. So the 3 tefachim is considered as if it's on the ground, so the Chanukiah, the menorah, has to be between 3 and 10 tefachim. That's what Ravina says in the name of Rava. Because if you were to tell me that you're allowed to put it higher than 10 tefachim, this Hakadaituch Lamala Meyasar is also acceptable, so then why did he put it in a place where it could cause damage? Go put it higher up. As we'll see, you're not allowed to have it more than 20 amos above the ground. So go put it 15 amos above the ground. Be well above the camels, well above everybody else. You'll be able to have Pirsume Nitsa, and you'll be not putting anybody in harm's way. So obviously, from the fact that we didn't require him to put it more than 10 tefachim above the ground, so we see that that is the halacha. He's allowed to put it there. Because these are kodayt at lamal Nitsar is good, so that Amai Omer of Yehuda, then why did Rav Yehuda say that Ner Chanukah is Potter? Leimalei, we should have told the storekeeper, Havalei Lanucha, you should have go and placed your Chanukiah, Lamala Migola, well above the passing height of the camel, the rofo, and the rider on it. And therefore, from the fact that we didn't require him to do so, Yehuda said he's Potter, it must be, Elalav Shemamina, Mitzvah Lahanicha B'toch Asar. That the halach is that you have to put it within 10 tefachim of the ground. As I said, it has to be above 3 tefachim because it can't be on the ground. It has to be recognizable that you placed it there for a purpose of Ner Chanukah, so it has to be between 3 and 10 tefachim. That's what Ravina said in the name of Rabba, we can make a diuk from Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Gemara says, not necessarily so. Amri lo. Gemara says, you can't bring us a raya. You can't bring us wrong, but you can't bring us a raya for there. Because maybe, in fact, the olam emaloch, afilul imalam yasar. Maybe the halacha is you're allowed to place it above 10 tefachim, which is, of course, the halacha. Ideally, one should place it less than 10 tefachim. That is worked down in Shulchan Aruch. But one is allowed to put it above 10 tefachim. It just has to be under 20 amma, as we'll see at the end of the Gemara here. But the bottom line is, you can't bring us a raya that it must be below 10 tefachim, because you could say the halacha is it could be above 10 tefachim. What are you going to say? Well, then why didn't he put it higher up and not put it in harm's way? So Gemara says, no. You know what? The guy's doing a mitzvah. If you have to go get a stepladder and go put it up 15 amah high, then the guy may not do the mitzvah. It can make it harder for him to do the mitzvah. So therefore, we allow him to do the mitzvah in the easiest way possible for him. So even though the halacha may say it could be above 10 tefachim, we don't require him to put it above 10 tefachim. And therefore, you can't bring a saraya one way or the other that you must place it lechatchila below 10 tefachim from our Mishnah, from the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara concludes, like I just said, Amar Rav Kahana, Darish Rav Nosson Bar Mimyumi, Mishmei de Rav Tanchum. Rav Kahana taught that Rav Nosson Bar Mimyumi darshin in the name of Rabbi Tanchum, that the upper limit of Ner Chanukah is 20 amos. Ner Chanukah shenichol amalim yesim amo psula, because it's not going to be visible in most people's line of sight, and therefore you're not makayim the mitzvah pirsumenisa, which is the purpose of the Ner Chanukah. So if it's above 20 amma from street level, then you're not going to go and be yotzi. Now, obviously, if you live in an apartment, that's a different story. If you're living up there, so then the minhag today is that we light in our apartments in Chutz Laretz, and I saw they do light outside. So when you're lighting outside, so it has to be from the ground. It shouldn't be more than 20 amah high. In your apartment, it also should be more than 20 amah high. Most people don't have an indoor room that is going to have a ceiling that is 20 amah, which is either 30 to 40 feet from the floor. You don't have to worry about that indoors. And that's the din. Ner Chanukah shenichol amalim yesrim amah is psula, and this is similar to the din of kisukah. A sukkah, the ceiling, the schach of the sukkah has to be less than 20 amah from the floor of the sukkah. We learned that in the Gemara in Sukkah and Kimavoy. And we learned in Eirvin and also in Gemara in Shabbos that you have to place, when you have a mavoy that is enclosed on three sides and it's open on the fourth side to Rishas HaRabim, you have to put either a lechi or a korah in that place. So the mavoy, in this case, when you put up the korah on the top, it has to be less than 20 amah tall. Again, so it will be visible to people, and that way it is good. If it's higher, if the sukkah is more than 20 amah tall, the schach is more than 20 amah above the ground of the sukkah, or the beam of the mavui to enclose it in is more than 20 amah above the floor of the mavui, so then it's no good. With this, we conclude the beautiful Perek HaKones. Hadron Lech HaKones, Hadron Lech HaKones, Hadron Lech HaKones. Mitzvah Hashem, we will return to you before even the next cycle of Daf Yomi goes. But now we begin the seventh Perek, Perek Merubah. And the Mishnah starts, Merubah Midas Tashlumei Kefel Mimidas Tashlumei Arba V'Chamisha. So the Mishnah is telling us that the dinim of paying Kefel are different than the dinim of paying the 4 and 5. What are we talking about over here? So just give people a quick background. So when a person is a ganav, we had this in the previous parak, if a person is a ganav and he's found to have stolen something, so then he has to pay Kefel. He has to pay the principal and he has to pay, again, the price of the principal, what we call Kefel. He has to pay a double payment. So if a ganav, this is opposed to a goslin that we learned that doesn't pay kefel, but again, if a person steals something surreptitiously, so the difference we mentioned previously, we'll see it later in this parak as well, between a ganav and a gazlan, is the ganav is afraid of people. He comes in surreptitiously at night, doesn't want people to catch him, but he's not afraid that Kosh Baruch is catching him and seeing him. Whereas the gazlan is not afraid of people, he just goes in and takes whatever he wants, so he's on somewhat of a higher madrega than the ganav. The ganav is afraid of people, but not afraid of Hashem. The gazlan's not afraid of Hashem, that's terrible, but he's also not afraid of people, at least it's not doing something as terrible as the ganav in terms of a hashkafic approach. Both of them are thieves, so they're both terrible people, but the goslin doesn't pay kefil, the ganav does pay kefil. That's the din of tashlumei kefil. Now there's an additional din of what's called dalad vehei, arboa v'chamisha, and that's when you go and steal an animal, and it's specifically only to an animal. So you steal an animal and shecht it, so then when you shecht this animal, or if you sell the thing that you stole, tovach o mochar, tovach means shchita, mochar means you sell it, so then in addition to the kefil, you have to pay an additional penalty. The total penalty will be either 4 or 5. 4 for a seh, and the Gemara will explain, because a seh you have to carry, so you're not made to pay as much, and the shar, which carries itself, so then you pay the full penalty of 5. So that's the 4 or 5. It includes the kefel, and then plus the kefel, either 2 or 3 additional times, for a total of 4 or 5. It's called dalid vehei. So the Mishnah tells us that the dinim of tashlumei kefel are more than the dinim of 4 or 5. What do we mean by that? Shemida tashlumei kefel, the din of kefel is applicable no heges bein bedaver sheish bo ruach chayim ubein bedaver shein lo ruach chayim. If you steal a vase, or if you steal a sheep or a dog, so you pay kefel when you're found out to have stolen it, and you didn't admit it, you say you didn't steal it, and then it turns out that you did steal it, so they catch you. So then, whether you stole a vase or whether you stole an animal, you have to pay kefil. Umidas tashlumi arba v'chamisha, einu noheges elo b'shor v'seh b'vad. However, in regards to the din of dalid v'hei, arba v'chamisha, tovach u'mochar, so when you shecht it or you sell it, that's only applicable to goats, sheep, or cow family, the three kosher type of behemoths. Enon Hegazel Bishor, which is the cattle, the bovine family, and Seh is a combination term that we use for both sheep and for goats. It's called Seh. We translate Seh normally as a sheep, but the word Seh is like tzon. It applies to both goats and to sheep. So there is no din of dal of the hay except for goats, sheep, or cow family animals. And this is based upon the pasuk shenema ki ignov ish shor o seh. The pasuk tells us specifically that the person stole a shor or a seh, the goat, sheep, or cow family member. And then utvachu he shechted it or he sold it. In this situation, so he pays mishaleim chamisho tachas hashor v'arbatzon tachas haseh. So this is the halach over here that dalud behe applies only to these animals. Furthermore, the Mishnah says en agonev achar aganav mishalim tishul mekefel. If somebody steals something and then aganav steals it from him, so Reuven steals from Shimon and then Levi steals from Reuven. So in this situation, also, there is no din of Dalid Vehei or Kefel. So the Mishnah says, "En agonim achar aganim mishalim tushum kefel." If Reuven stole from Shimon, and then Levi steals from Reuven, so Levi won't have to pay Kefel. And likewise, "Lo tovech lo mocher achar aganim mishalim tushum arba v'chamisha." If Levi then stole it and then sold it or shechted it, he won't have the penalty of Dalid Vehei. It's only the ganav himself, based upon the psukim, that has to go and play. Ki ignov ish shor oseh. So only if you stole it from the original owner, but not if you steal it from a thief. Okay, that's our Mishnah. And the more thoughts on it says, the Ilu, but our Mishnah didn't list the following difference between Tashlumi Kefil and Tashlumi Arba V'Chamisha, implying that there is no such distinction in the following case. Ilu Midas Tashlumi Kefil, no Hegas, Bein Beganav, Bein Betoin, Tainaskanav. But in our Mishnah, it didn't make a distinction between a person who was a shomer and says the item was stolen from him and he was really posheya and it wasn't stolen from him, he stole it himself, and somebody who's a ganav. Both of them pay tashlumi kefil. Umidas tashlumi arba v'chamisha eino noheges ela beganav bavad. But the din of dalad v'hei doesn't apply to a shomer, it only applies to a ganav. So why didn't the Mishnah list this as well? Lo katani, it didn't state the latter thing. Oh, let us suggest that this is Messiah Leila Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. This is in support of the statement that Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba made. What did he say? Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said the following halacha in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Hatoing kindness ganav bipikadon. If somebody was given a pikadon to watch, and he says, oh, a ganav stole it, and I was a shomachinim with this pikadon, and he says a ganav stole it, but it turns out that he really stole it. So he has to, in fact, pay mishalim tashul mekefel. However, Tova Hu Mochar Mishalim Tashlumi Arba V'Chamisha. He has to go and pay Tashlumi Dalad V'Hei Arba V'Chamisha if he then took the Pekodon and he sold it or he shechted it. Oh, let us bring, this is a Raya. Our Mishnah didn't make a distinction between Dalad V'Hei and Tashlumi Kefil in regards to the Pekodon. So this is a Raya. Our Mishnah is a Raya to this statement that Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said in the name of Yochanan. That's one way to look at it. Another way to read this is no. Let us say that our Mishnah is a riot to this statement of Rechia Bar Abba and make that the definitive statement that we're saying. From the fact that the Mishnah didn't make this comment that these two adinim are different, oh, let's bring a riot that they're the same din, exactly like Rechia Bar Abba saying Rav Yochanan. But whether you learned it the first way or whether you learned it the second way, so meek tane ain bain. Our Mishnah didn't say, and there are no other differences other than what we're stating over here. It didn't use the lashon of ain bain. It used the lashon of merubak tani, meaning that there could be other differences between tashlumi kefil and dal v'hei, including not like the din of Rechia Bar Abba or Rabbi Yochanan, and maybe in fact the one who has it be called is chayiv kefil, but wouldn't be chayiv dal v'hei. Aye, then why didn't it list it? Because Tana Vishir. The Mishnah wasn't giving a laundry list of every single difference between Tashlumi Kefil and Dalad V'Hei. So therefore, you can't bring a Saraya one way or the other that our Mishnah is a Raya to Rechia Bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan. There is no difference by Pikadon between Tashlumi Kefil and Dalad V'Hei. Then the Mishnah said, Shemidat Tashlumi Kefil Noheges Uchulei, that the din of Kefil applies to both living things and inanimate objects, and the din of Dalad V'Hei obviously only applies to animals. So the Gemara says, how do we know this? Where do we see this from? So the Braisa tells us, the Tana Rabbanan. The Pasuk says, Al kol dvar pesha, al shor, al chamor, al seh, al salma, al kol avidah, asher yomar ki uzeh, ad alokim, yavod ar shnehem, asher yashun alokim, yishalim shnayim l'reyehu. This is the din of Kefil. And it applies starts off with telling us, I'll call Dvar Pesha on anything that you are responsible for. So you are responsible, that's a general statement, klal. And then it tells us the specifics. Al shor, if you steal a shor, al chamor, a donkey, al seh, on a, either a goat or a sheep, the al salmo, and on a garment, on a piece of clothing. So in all of these things, you're chayim. So that's a prat. Each of these four things is a specification, a prat. So we start off with a klal, al kol devar pesha, then we have the prat, shor, chamor, seh, salmo, and then we have al kol avida. Again, this includes anything. So chazar v'klal. So we have over here a klal uprat uklal, and the rules of klal uprat uklal are as follows. Iatadon elokein uprat. That the rule applies to anything that is similar to the prat. Doesn't have to be identical to the prat, it has to be similar to the prat. So what is the common denominator amongst the prat over here? The shor, the chamor, the set, and the salma. Ma prat mefurish dover ha-metaltal. All of these are metaltal, and all of these are movable items. The guf amonim, and they're intrinsically worth something in and of themselves. As opposed to, we'll see, a shtar, a document which has no intrinsic value itself, but it's what it stands for. So all of these four pratim that were brought down, all are metaltali, and all are intrinsically worth something themselves. So aft called dover. So anything like them, the common denominator is these two things, metaltalin and gufa mamon. So anything that is metaltali and gufa mamon, this din applies. Aft called dover, metaltal, the gufa mamon. So what does this come to exclude from the din of kefel? Yatsu, this comes to exclude karkos, because karka is she'eno metaltalin, it's not movable property. So this excludes if you steal karka, then you pay kefel. No, you just give back the karka. Likewise, Yatsu Avodim, it excludes an Eved Kanani if you steal them. Shehuk Shulu Karkos, because an Eved Kanani is technically metaltali, but it is connected in many ways in terms of the Kinyanim, like Karka. So an Eved has the halachi status of Karka in many ways, and therefore it's excluded from the din of Kefil as well. Likewise, Yatsu Shtaros, a legal document, is also not included, because a legal document is just a piece of paper. It's worth less than a penny, even though the contents of it obligate somebody to $1 million. But therefore, sha'afo pi shemetaltalin, the shtar is movable item, but it's not gufo mamon. Ain gufon mamon, it's not intrinsically worth anything. The piece of paper is worth less than a penny. The implication of the shtar is worth $1 million, then now Reuven owns Shimon's $1 million. But that's not intrinsically to the paper, so therefore it's not included in the din of kefil. And yotze hektish, and likewise hektish is excluded, because as I read, the end of the pasuk says, Yishalayim Shnayim L'Re'eyu. Re'eyu Ksiv, it has to be your friend. And we had pointed out earlier in the Masechta as well, Hektish is not your friend, and therefore the din of Kefil doesn't apply to any of these things. Karka doesn't apply to Avadim, Kenanim, it doesn't apply to Ashtar, and it doesn't apply to Hektish. So those are the things that are excluded by the Klal Upratu Klal that we brought down. It has to be something that is metatali, and it has to be something that is Gufo Mamon. That's the common denominator. More questions, as it says, Ima prat mefurish dover shenivloso mitame b'magumasa. It says, wait a second, you have shor and a chamar, these are items, if they're dying naturally, so then the mitame with maga and masa, like in a vela. So therefore, maybe the common denominator is only things, av kol dover shenivloso mitame b'magumasa has a din of kefel, and therefore, this would exclude birds, aval ofoslo. We had a similar idea early in the Masechta, where the similar structure of the question was brought down, that maybe it's only talking about things that are mitame with nevela, with tumas maga and masa, and therefore birds, even kosher birds, are only mitame when you eat them, when they're inside of you as you're eating them. So therefore, non-kosher birds aren't metame at all with tumas nevela, and even the kosher birds are only metame in beis ablia. So therefore, maybe birds aren't included in the din of kefil. So Gemara says, Umi Martis Amr's Hachi, how can you possibly say this? It didn't only say shor and chamar, it also said vos salmo kisiv. It also talked about a garment. The garment has nothing to do with the vela. Gemara says, you're right, I'm right, but you could answer, anan bibale chayim komrina. In regards to living things, so Ema, in regards to the living things, the din of kefil only applies. Ema bali chayim, dover shenivlosu mitami b'magumasa in, dover shenivlosu mitami b'magumasa lo. You're right, in regards to garment, this wouldn't apply, but in regards to living creatures that you steal, so only if they're metami tumas tevela magid masa does the din of kefil apply, but birds it wouldn't apply. And we turn to Samach Gimel Ben Aleph, deha kolchad v'kad klal uprat ba pei nafshei darshin ulei, because each of them is also viewed separately. Well, we had four things: al shor, al chamor, al seh, al salma. So while they're all listed together, nevertheless, each one is a prat And therefore, you can darshan just the living things to be something that's mitami nevela with maga and masa, and therefore should exclude birds. So therefore, avol ofo slow. So maybe birds should be excluded. But that's not the din. If you steal somebody's parrot, you do have to pay kefil. So Gemara says, no. If you wanted to exclude birds, then why did it list multiple protein? It should have just listed one, and we would know the din. So Gemara questions and says, which one should we have listed? Hai nichtov rechmon. Which one should the Torah have written? Ikos of rechmon ashar. If you only wrote shar, you know what I would have said? Havamina karvi legabi mizbeach in shein karvi legabi mizbeach lo. I would have said that maybe shar is an example of kosher animals that can go up in the mizbeach. So the goats, sheep, and cows would be included in that, but a donkey, no. So that's why you can't just write shar. No, then just write a donkey. Because of rechmon chamar, I would have said, you know what? Havamina kadosh bibichora in shein kadosh bibichora lo. You know what? A donkey has a special din, a peter chamor beset, that you have to go redeem a firstborn of a donkey. So any animal that has kedushas bechor, so this would include the goats, sheep, cows, and donkeys, but it wouldn't include any other animal. So therefore, it couldn't just list that. No. Amri Gemara says, imkei nichor rechmona shor and chamor. So teach me shor and chamor, and therefore, I would say that this includes those animals that have tumas maga umasa with nevela. Seh, lomali. Then why did it also have to teach me seh? What's the word seh coming to teach us? Shema mino lasuya yofas. That's extra totally, and that comes to include birds, teaching us that it's not the common denominator of tumas maga from nevela, but it has to do with the fact that they are metautli and gufo mamon. Marcel questions this. It says, Vema lasuya yofas tahorim. So maybe then it only comes to include kosher birds. Dumyo the set, just like it says, a kosher animal, so maybe it's only kosher birds. And there is a concept of tumah even by birds, as I pointed out, the matami begodim abeis abliya, that when you eat a kosher nevela bird, so let's say you eat a chicken that wasn't shechted, so then you're matami bebeis abliya. As you swallow it, you're matami. So it has an aspect of tumah to it, not the same dinim as tumas nevela, a behema of mag and masa, but it has tumah of beis abliya. So maybe this only applies to kosher birds and animals that are nevela, that are matami b'tumas magamasa, kosher and non-kosher. But avo ofos tamein the less b'tuma, the lo matami b'gadim basically alone. But maybe the non-kosher birds, you eat a eagle, you go and eat a raven, these are non-kosher birds, so then you're over the itzur of eating non-kosher, but they're not matami in tumas Beis Abliya, so therefore, if you were to steal a raven, you'd steal an eagle, you'd only pay one time the Karen, you wouldn't pay Kefil. They're not included in the Klal Upratu Klal. So Moga answers, no. It says, kol. The Pasuk tells us, al kol devar pesha. And the word kol is coming to be marbe something else, ribuyahu, and therefore it comes to be marbe even the non-kosher birds that aren't metame with tumas Beis Abliya, but they're also included in the din of Kefil. Now, we're still in the middle of the sugya, but this is a good break point over here. Tomorrow we'll pick up and say, does the word kol always mean a riboy? Maybe sometimes the word kol doesn't mean a riboy, but this is a good break point. We finished off our drush of the kol pratu klal and explained all of the things that are included, which are metautli and guf and mamon, to exclude, for example, karka, avodim, ashtar, and hektish. With this, we conclude today's share.